This recording will be for the Emory County School District Board of Education regular meeting on Wednesday, December 2nd, 2009, held at San Rafael Junior High School, beginning at 7 p.m.
All right, we're going to start our board meeting. We welcome you all here. We're happy to be at the junior high.
I guess we have one up on the wall over there.
Oh,
I was looking for a
flag. Oh, okay. And that is our first item. Let's stand for the Pledge of Allegiance.
It's on the wall down there.
I pledge allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, our first item on the agenda are the consent items, the warrants and the minutes from November 2009 meeting. Are there any questions that haven't been resolved? No? Okay, motion is in order.
I would make a motion that we approve them as we have received them.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Okay, we have the approval of the Utah Consolidated Applications for Emory School District.
Maybe we ought to give you a test. Let's see. This is our big, huge, used to be called the CUSAP, Consolidated Utah Student Achievement Plan, and now it's called the Utah Consolidated Applications. And it's an online application that we have to fill out based on needs assessment. And I tried to go through and just pull out and write up the goals for you. Tonight I added another copy of the goals, but if you go to the handout that I gave you tonight, if you go to the last two pages in blue, last three pages in blue print from the time that we sent to the other, we have added K-3 reading achievement, the goals that we had for our K-3 reading plan that we've had going now for several years. So that hasn't changed, but it's been added to this application. It's still the same. We're still doing the same things with the reading teacher and with our extended day kindergarten in the two Title I schools, Fairland and Huntington. So that was added to it. Also added was the, on the second to last page, the Title I. This is the program we've been operating forever, but we've added it to the plan, the goal, and the strategies with our Title I program. So it's nothing new. It's the same. And also the last page, the special education. Those were not in the online plan until Monday or Tuesday. Tuesday, I think. Yesterday. So those have been included, but it's the same program that we've continued to operate. They were just added. The ones that we sent to you were goals that have been set in elementary math, 3-6 math, based on the student's the core test in determining the areas that we needed improvement there, and also the secondary science, 7-12 science, was a target area based on our needs assessment as we looked at the core test. And so those goals and action steps are included in there. Also a continuing area goal of improving the quality of instruction. We as a district have one of the highest rates of teachers who are not highly qualified under No Child Left Behind. And of course one of the reasons for that is because, well, there's several reasons. The biggest is that you're in a district where we require, as other rural districts do, teachers to teach courses where they don't have a major. In other words, to be highly qualified, you have to have a major in that subject area you're teaching. We have teachers who are qualified according to state standards by having a major or a minor or an endorsement from the state, but under No Child Left Behind, you have to have a major. So if you're teaching, for example, if you're teaching you teach a math class, you teach a social studies class, you might teach a science class. Well, you don't have a major in all three. You may have a major in one of them, or you may have a minor in all three. But under No Child Left Behind, you're not considered highly qualified because you have to have a major. So we recognize it, but there's not a lot you can do about it. Our teachers are qualified to teach the subjects and the courses, but they're not considered highly qualified. But one of our goals is to try to encourage teachers to become highly qualified, which means either going back and getting a major, or it means passing the practice exam that goes with that course. And for several years now, we have offered a $500 stipend to teachers who will become highly qualified by taking the praxis. We've offered to pay for the praxis exam and for their expenses to get there and take it. But so far, we haven't had a lot of takers. There are no penalties under No Child Left Behind for not being highly qualified, other than you have to, in your syllabus, you have to note those teachers who are not considered highly qualified under No Child Left Behind, or send a letter home with the students indicating that under No Child Left Behind they're not highly qualified. But there's no other penalties, and so it's not a high priority for teachers to either take the exam or to go back and get the major. We have had several who have done it. So that's one of our goals, based on the needs assessment and based on the report that we get from the state. And then, of course, improving the school climate for learning, which comes from our SHARP survey and from our concerns with bullying and those issues. So we have set goals there, and our ELL students, our English language learner students that we have in a couple of our schools. So that's really where the goals came from for the plan. Everything else in there that makes it so thick is basically because of online, that's what it creates, yeah, as you put it together. And all of those things have to tie together with your budget detail and all of those kind of things. So the plan was, the deadline was end of November. Most districts still haven't got it quite complete. They're still working on it. It's quite controversial right now because of how difficult it is and how complicated it is to do. But we did have an extension of a week or two to get it into the state office. So we're here tonight asking for board approval of our comprehensive plan, and by Friday then it will be submitted to the state. So I recommend that the board approve this consolidated application for Emory School District. If you have any questions, we have the people here that can try to answer it. It is a very complicated process.
I have a couple of questions. One is, if a teacher is consistently not meeting the annual progress, are they encouraged, or are they helped,
qualified?
Well, if their students are not meeting the course,
well, actually, the AYP is not broken down by teacher. It's broken down by
grade.
Grades 3 through 6, and
so they're not individualized.
Then I had another question.
So it's by school.
Okay, I had another question.
And there are, if they consistently don't make AYP, then yeah, you go into what's called program improvement. They have to, and there's a planning process you go through with the school. And if you don't do it 2 years in a row, parents are given an option to transport the kids to another school.
Title I only.
Title I school.
The other ones don't have that option.
No, they. Okay. Well, there's not. They don't have those consequences.
Okay. The other thing, I know that Farron has that, where they meet quarterly and analyze. Is that every school does that?
Most of our elementaries are in that, have some form of that process. I think your three Title I schools have that. And I know that
obviously it's working. They do very well.
Yeah, it's a tracking
system. I was impressed with that.
System.
It's something that probably everybody could benefit from. That's the only questions I have.
Well, my question goes right along with yours. One of the strategies was that secondary teachers will meet quarterly,
mm-hmm,
and discuss the data and share effectiveness. Are we doing that already?
We have done, but the last couple of years hasn't been very consistent. What we're trying to set up now is subject area meetings where all of the math teachers would get together.
And each principal will take one subject area?
That's the plan. We're doing that now with elementary. We're doing it with elementary right now, where each principal is assigned a grade level, and they organize those grade level meetings. And what Gwen has talked about, and by the way, she's in Green River tonight getting ready for this thing tomorrow we have down there. But what she is planning to do is do a similar thing with the secondary, where each principal, as we looked at the secondary principals we have, each one of them have a specialty area, basically based on their major that they had. So that you have one who's in English, has expertise in English, you have one in math, you have one in science, and you have one in social studies. So what she would like to do is assign those principals in those areas and have them coordinate then subject area meetings with those content area teachers, and use that time for planning and sharing ideas and also looking at the test data and setting goals. So that's the plan. That's why it's in here the way it is.
I'd like to see how that works.
Can I add something to that?
Mm-hmm.
Larry has started,
mm-hmm.
I think he started it last year with us at the high school.
It
was something new. And on our all-faculty meeting week,
mm-hmm.
We meet as groups. So the science teachers have already met this year. We're supposed to meet this week with the CTE teachers, but one of our teachers is out with shoulder surgery, Mr. Keel. So he rescheduled that one. We don't know yet when. But he has that scheduled so that we can look at those things and we're actually analyzing now. So Mr. Davis has started that at the high school.
Yeah, each school, we're hoping that.
Yeah, it's nice. It's helpful.
The problem in your small schools is you don't have departments, because you may only have one teacher that teaches the subject area. But as a district, the subject area meetings, I know when I was curriculum director, we did it on a quarterly basis. We pulled them together and we had some really good sessions, and that hasn't worked well for the past several years. But the goal is now that we will give some leadership responsibility to principals in those areas and then pull those teachers together and do that kind of same kind of analysis and planning so that the elementary had been doing.
That seems to be really effective. I think that'd be good. I'd like to see that in there. That was good.
I'm glad you saw those things.
I read it. Any other?
I move that we accept it and it's been presented with the changes that Mississippi Grade goes tonight.
I'll second that.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Okay, we
thank
have
you. That's great.
That's a lot of work.
Yeah.
Personnel actions, names for approval.
We just have two educational assistant positions that recently been filled. As soon as I find them again. I had one that I sent to you. Alan Lemon has a 3-hour per day educational assistant at Cottonwood. This is for the fifth grade that has 34 kids in it right now. We're still on, that's a temporary position because we're still on the edge there of what we can do with that class, what we need to do with it. And the other one is Pauline Jensen. Here at Farron Elementary School is a 2-hour special ed educational assistant. This is John. Is that a replacement for?
Yeah.
Yeah, that is because of the. Okay. You may also notice that we are advertising for a full-time or a. We're advertising for a
resource
teacher for Santa Fe. We now have about 50 students who are in the special ed qualification area. And even though our numbers drop, our special ed population continues to increase. So we're at a point where that caseload is large enough that we need to look at hiring another teacher. So we are advertising. I think we have a couple of applications right now. But those two,
we're still
talking about that.
Do you think
they
added two more students?
No. We're still talking about that. The funding is not a problem there because of the special ed funding and also the Recovery Act money that we have. It's not a funding issue at all, but it is you have to match it up because when you do it here, you have to look at there.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what we're looking at now is the ratios. So as we study that a little bit more, we'll make that decision. But somewhere between half to full time, but.
Okay. Okay,
with those two names, I would recommend the board approve them.
Well, I'll make a motion that we approve them.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Okay, we have the approval of the board meeting calendar for 2010. Are there any problems with that?
You notice the one in January is a week later than normal.
Yeah,
it puts the board meeting right after the holidays. And also, it's the night before the USBA convention starts that next night, and Jared and I both have meetings usually that morning. So, We have pushed that a week back if that's acceptable to the board, to the 13th. And then the one in June is about a week later than typically because of the it gets us closer to when we get our tax rates.
Okay.
So that we can know, not tax rates, the information,
the basic levy.
The basic levy, so that we know it helps be able to better set the budget for that meeting. So
June 22nd is the last day that we can do that meeting in June, but this year it falls on the day of the week, and we can do it on the 22nd.
Okay.
So.
That work for everyone?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I move that we accept the calendar as it's been presented.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Okay, we'll go to Principal Johnson for the principal's report.
Last year we set a record for the shortest board meeting. I don't know if we're half to break that.
Come on.
I don't think you'll make it quite. Are you looking for a reason to have a short report of your own?
You know. I'm going to defer just the first few minutes of my time to Mr. Butler. I'd like to talk a little bit about some library changes and things. I hope you noticed the new cabinet.
Looks nice.
We got new chairs and those tables, I think, were delivered yesterday.
Wow.
So we are all done all around. So that was a good thank you to anybody for having any help in getting it done for us. And it's worked really well. We are very proud of this. The kids take care of us. This summer, we were also able to put 10 more computers in that little lab right there. So most of our classes, we have 30 now, so most classes can all come in here. It was just too hard for them to speak inside or something like that before. So we get used often, and mostly we get used by Mrs. Clements now. And this is because we have another lab for our English teacher and our science department and stuff. But it's been wonderful, and I'm just so grateful to be a part of it. I'm so proud of the team. And a couple of fun things that we've done last year, we used some of our money to have authors come to our school, and I've just been so proud about that. It's just been wonderful. And in fact, this time when I meet some of the kids coming back, they'll say, "Oh, Mrs. Butler, I remember when you had this author," or something like that. And that's really a neat thing that sticks out in their mind. Just this last 2 days, we had the author, Ron Ballman, who's a teenager, just turned 16 last week. He's a sophomore at Mount High High School. And he's written a novel and had it printed, published by Cedar Fort Press, that's Lee Nelson's group. And usually after I have an author, I hear other people complaining and stuff about, "Well, why didn't you let me know?" So this time I did. I called up all of the principals. I sent them all a copy of Ron's book and asked if they wanted to have him at their school. And every one of them said yes, and except my grandmother. And so we made arrangements. He and his mother came, and I've just been real happy. I don't know if you've had any kids talk about it, but it turned out great.
Only that they wanted $15. Every one of my kids are in elementary
they
with $15
want
to buy the book.
And that's what's so wonderful. There's all kinds of studies that show if they own the book, or especially if they heard the author and he signed it, they're more likely to read that book. So I appreciate the help that I get from Mr. Johnson in backing up all these new ideas. It really does make a difference. It just makes such a difference. And my faculty is wonderful to work around these projects and to encourage us and have us help work with them, even if we have to miss a class or something that day. So, and I think that you'll see this happen more throughout the district now, because I've only heard good reports from each school. So I hope that's right. I hope there hasn't been anybody that had any trouble. But he did a real good job. Talked about his book, had a slideshow. He even at the end put on some of those stilts that look like some of the people that have amputated legs, the curvy metal things. He walked all around the bowls and talked about how hard that was for him to learn, and he did it. And he compared that to if he started writing his book when he was 11, then he's probably been that he's a good example of that, something we tried hard and was able to do. So I think he's well on his way. I really do. It's an interesting book. I don't know if you guys have got to read it, but if you're any kind of a fan, like Aragon or things like that, anyway. And Mr. Johnson doesn't know about this, but we have another little talk.
Oh.
He's so good. Last year, you guys know, we had an author lady came that writes the funnest, happiest romance novels. And we had a special day for the girls and for their moms, and had a little special treat for them. And oh man, they thought it was just awesome. And really, we had a lot of mothers that came. And so this year, I've been trying to think of what I could do for the boys and their dads. Yeah, I think that would be so cool. And so I have talked to this one man who's just written a book. He has a game, kind of a game preserve down in Cedar City, and he fixes wild animals. In fact, just last week he was able to fix an eagle's wings and release it. He fixes all kinds of animals, and he's written his book. But we haven't worked out to get him here with the money. But today, I was so happy to see you last night on TV. One of our former teachers, Charles Durant.
I saw that. It's great.
He's back. And I'm so grateful.
Yeah.
And so I've emailed him and asked if he'll come and be our guy. I think it would be so awesome. He can come. He's a storyteller that you want to win. And he also, even 9 years ago, I think, when he was here, did such good slides. And so we're trying to get his schedule arranged so he can, if we have a different day off, and like, I don't know, he doesn't know he has to go to school the day Monday before Christmas, and he might can come down here, but I think that would be awesome. And you guys are all welcome to come and hear him talk and motivate the boys, and it's just a fun thing. So I hope that's okay. It's free.
Now let us know.
Yeah, let us know. That would be fun to come here.
It will.
If you send me an email or
okay.
Get a Gwen, then we can
okay.
Send it on to the
that'd
board members. So
we like
we're still doing our little book club thing over there. If you look out there, we had a big butt contest. You won't believe some of the great big. A little Hinkins girl, she's about this big, won the prize. She had the very biggest scare, but that was good for to be silly. It really doesn't help him read.
One sentence, she's fixing animals, and the other, they're killing them.
Yeah.
But our thing that really works at our school, and I've tried to, when our kids read, it's a way to get our good readers to keep on reading. They only need to have 20 points by midterm if they're an A student on accelerated readers. And so some of them, well, most of us are anyway, but to really encourage them, we have a thing where as soon as they get 100 points, I give them this really neat card that looks like a driver's license, kind of, and they get to take their best friend and get in the front of the white line.
Mm-hmm.
And they were guilt to get in the front of the white line, and it makes them so popular because everybody wants to be their friend.
Cool.
They can get in it. It really is a good program. And then you can see up there some names are higher. They have 200 points, so now they get to bring two friends. So it just keeps them reading. This is a fun thing. I want to when we had blogs and we had ADA kids that read double what's required of an A student. So they got to come up here with Bronze, and I made a special color on paper that have this is colored editor copy and this is the book's really all colored and have his picture on it and Ron hand signed all of them and wrote them a little messy keep on reading or something and then we gave them candy bars and so they had a little thing they like it anyway but I can only do all this because it's art and I really do that.
Thank you, Ms. Butler. She is very wonderful. Last year we had four authors come. Yeah. And we've already had one this year, and we're just looking forward to these opportunities for the kids to see what other people, professionals are doing. She's got some contacts that are just unbelievable. We're really grateful for her. And this place is always busy, and she makes the kids feel welcome and loved. I know that. She's got, it's kind of like having little baby bunnies, and she's a gift.
a lot of bunnies.
School is going well. I love my faculty. I think they're just top notch people. And our aides and secretary Julie's amazing. Don't know what I'd ever do without her. She's truly amazing. It's a good group of people. We've got 240 students this year. We lost 12, like every school. We lost the second. We have to lose 12, which is, I think, one more than the next quarter. So 12 periods of teaching and acquired another, I think, 23 kids. And so that's created some hardships, but every school is there. It's not us alone. Our teachers do good things. In the labs, in the classrooms, they do good things. They work. Mr. Hales is doing some cooperative learning. It's got a few parents concerned because of the group work, but I'm sure you'll hear about that. All those things come out. Gwen was here talking with us today, and we got some things straightened out there. But we've seen an average raise from first term to midterm with how the kids are doing on their overall testing. Probably not enough to go from a C to an A, but enough to raise, you know, a part of the grade. And that's just because of the good use of cooperative learning. And so we think that will be okay if we can ease some parent concerns. And where the concerns come is when he changes groups frequently, and the two top students together, there's no complaints because they're both working well and they're teaching each other. But when there's a lower student placed with an upper student, upper students who complain because they're concerned that the other one will drag them down. Mr. Hales has assured them that won't happen and that he will take a look at their individual testing and their individual performance, but still those concerns are there. Here's a future warning for you when you get the phone call. Our custodians do a wonderful job. They get along together well and they work hard. They keep the school working well. We're very grateful for that. They solve a lot of their own maintenance problems and take care of things the way they should. Very grateful for our maintenance department. They are fast and they are quick and they work well. With a phone call and within an hour they're here taking care of things. I don't know how they do it for 10 schools, but. And it's the same with the tech people, Wayne that comes and keeps us running. Like Diane said, we have this now, that's the 30 lab station, 20 in here and 10 in that room right there. We just finished adding 6 more computers and putting them in rows. That's the only way we could get them in. So we have a 36 computer lab where across from Mrs. Jensen's room. And then we have another 30 computer lab out by Mrs. Carter. And then the regular one where Mr. Barnett teaches. So our teachers are using them and they're doing some good things, some poetry, some travel brochures, some the poetry has been wonderful. Lots of writing with the English teachers and the kids are enjoying it and the teachers are doing a good job. Probably the Not the, well, no. One of the difficulties is sharing teachers between Kennedy and NFL. We share two teachers.
Mm-hmm.
And that's difficult for both schools because they basically lose their prep and their time prepared in their travel.
Mm-hmm.
And they're working hard and they're trying hard and it's a
mm-hmm.
hard situation for them.
It would be hard.
So, we, you know, all schools have our difficulties, but we're still cruising along and doing the best we can. Grateful for the school board and the work that you do in our district office. I'm always very comfortable calling them and asking for suggestions or for help or just venting. Those things work and, you know, it's a good system we have here. I appreciate it. Thanks for being here. Do you have any questions?
I don't think so. Thanks for that report. We appreciate your positive. It's not an easy year to be positive, so thank you for that. We know there's some hardships that we, you know, that the circumstances have placed on our school district, so thank you for that, and thank you, Mrs. Butler. I'm just amazed at your enthusiasm every year, so thank you for what you do for students. We appreciate that. Thanks. We'll go to the superintendent's report.
First of all, I'd like to recognize the passing of another former educator, Joyce Larson Huntington, who passed away probably a little over a week ago. She was a teacher in our school district at one time, and we recognize her death. Also, I sent to you a press release from College of Eastern Utah. We were concerned about our programs, particularly at Emory High School, that are being funded out of the Applied Technology College. I did meet with the president of CEU, Mike King. Brad's name's on this press release as a contact, so Mike King, and talked about our concerns, and he assured me at that time that there were no plans at this point to cut any of those programs, that the funding for those programs are separated in their accounting, but of course we don't know if that'll hold true in the future. They are reducing five programs at the college. They have recommended to the Board of Regents reduction. They have five associate degrees. Four of them will be reduced to one-year certificate programs, and then another one eliminated. And so they're having to make another $500,000 in cuts, and that's how they're approaching it. But right now that will not affect our programs, at least until the legislature gets into session. We see if the college, the higher education takes a bigger cut, they may look at some of those programs. But we have some critical programs there that if they were to cut the funding, we would need to try to find a way to maintain and fund those programs. They're extremely popular and extremely important, and we have a lot invested in it. So we would have to look at that. But the legislature starts in another 6 weeks. We're all looking forward to that. I did send you some information about that also. Jared's been in meetings. I've been in meetings with legislators. Had a meeting with all of our legislators 2 weeks ago. Talked to them, and of course, all they can give you is what they're hearing too, and the rumors that they hear. And the Speaker of the House met with the business officials, and I think all the indications are right now that they're looking. There's probably going to be another $150 million cut in the state on this year's budget. That's not next year. That's on the current budget. And of course, the hope is that they can cover that or use rainy day funds to cover any budget cuts that would be made in the current year's budget. But the next year's budget, they're telling most agencies they're looking at a minimum of 9% cut, and perhaps even higher. But with education, they're talking in a range of 3 to 5%. And Speaker Clark is indicating that we ought to be planning for 5, but they hope they can get it down to 3. Either one's not good news, but so they're looking at an $800 million shortfall for next year also, which is about as close to $1 billion as you can get, I guess. So we're not anticipating trying to find new ways to spend money. But we're hoping to get some flexibility from the legislature that they took away from us this last year, took away from all school districts, and also to hopefully get some assistance from the legislature on how we can make those reductions if we're called upon to do it. It'd be nice if they'd hold us harmless, but we don't anticipate that happening. There will be cuts again next year. So we'll have to deal with those as they come, and have no idea what they'll be until we're in the legislative session. But I did send to you the talking points there were three superintendents that met with our legislators in the local area, and what we discussed with them and asked them to consider. The problem you have is that rural legislators don't have a lot of power. So it's usually the leadership of your House and Senate up there that dictate what happens. And even though they're talking about a much smaller cut for education, it's still significant. It's huge. So we're not out of the woods yet. The good news is the economy is stabilized, but it's not really improving very fast. It's just holding its own. I guess that's about all I can report to you on the legislative side.
Okay.
I don't think I have anything else tonight to report to you.
Okay, then we'll go to Jared for a business administrator's report.
One of the other things that's going to come up this legislative session is possible changes to the Utah retirement system. You may have heard some rumblings about that. And I did go to a presentation where one of the leaders in Utah retirement systems, I don't know exactly what his position was, but he talked to us about some of the things that they're looking at. And, you know, we've heard they're doing this or they're doing that, but they really haven't made any decisions, and it'll be up to the legislature to do that. They're just, at this point, evaluating what the options are to make changes to the system and how much of an impact each of those options would make, so that the legislature can kind of have a list of things that they can look at and pick whatever they want to do. I would say from his presentation, something is going to be done. I guess the challenge they have is you kind of have three groups of people, or maybe even four, depending on how you look at it. You have people who are in the retirement system right now receiving a pension. You have those who are right at the edge of moving into the retirement system. Then you have your regular employees and then future employees who would be in the retirement system later on. And so they're trying to decide which of those groups to make changes to the plan and which changes to make. And it may be different for those different groups, but we'll just have to see. There's nothing definitive at this point.
One of the things that came out of the meeting that we had with our legislators a couple of weeks ago was there is a movement to push this year for not to take any action this year, but to form a study, a task force to study the state retirement system for a year before they make any decisions. There are a lot of legislators who feel like that the interest on investments now are rebounding so fast that it would be foolish to make any moves on the state retirement system until they see what's going to happen with it, because it could recover faster than they anticipated. So there is some movement to form a task force to study it for a year and then do something the following year. So anyway.
Yeah, and they lost 25% of their total value during the downturn in the economy. Mm-hmm. So they went from about $24 billion to $18 billion. In value, and that's why all of this discussion is happening.
Do you know what it is now?
No, but if I were to guess, probably 19 or 20.
19 or 20.
But I don't know.
I hate
to even guess.
Okay.
Okay, the second thing I wanted to discuss, we have received bids for buses, and I'm not going to bring these as an action item until next board meeting. But we have two different options for buses this year, and so I wanted to kind of review each of the options and see if any of you have opinions or input as far as which way we should go. And I've invited Roger to the meeting to kind of help explain some of the differences, but the basic idea is we can get a new bus with a new 2010 engine and setup. But there are new requirements for the 2010 engine. There's an additive.
Fuel additive, yeah.
Urea. Okay. That has to be put in with the fuel, and so that's kind of a difference. The other option is we can still purchase, and this is going to be the last time we can, a bus with a 2007 engine in it, which is like the ones we've purchased the last year or two. That option is a little bit more expensive. Both have gone up, you know, from last year, like they have the last several years. So we're looking at about $111,000 if we do the 2010, and $117,000 if we do the 2007. 7.
What does the additive add to the fuel cost? Does it add cost?
Yes.
It does. It's actually not added directly to fuel. It's the urea is injected into the exhaust stream, chemically changing the pollutant to neutralize.
So it's in the engine itself. It's not in the...
Not added.
It's in the tank, and it's injected into the exhaust stream after it comes out of the engine.
Okay.
So you just keep filling that tank up.
Yeah.
What's the cost of urea?
Expensive? Yeah, I've never heard of it.
Probably have a junior hike is
to take
that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Different stuff.
Oh.
What is it?
Urea is actually a fertilizer.
It's a fertilizer. It's a nitrogen.
Nitrogen.
Yeah.
Okay.
This is liquid. This is going to be expensive. Grain
I've heard it used in another
it's
context.
About $4 a gallon, and it, you use 2% urea compared to the fuel. Well, 100 gallons of diesel, 2 gallons of urea.
Roger and I have kind of discussed the pros and cons, and we both kind of sit on the fence. It's hard to make a decision, which I guess everybody wanted to see if any of you had input. I'm just trying to think of some of the things we've discussed. Next year, we won't have an option. We'll be going with the 2010. So, I mean, they're coming. It's something that we'll have to deal with next year.
Is storage an issue with the urea?
Yeah, how is it?
How does it have to be stored? It's fairly...
Only a 55-pound barrel.
And doesn't it have to be kept secure because it's one of the bomb-making... No, I believe it don't. I think there are some real stringent rules about where
you store it. There's some chemical concerns there. You've got to be careful to store it that way, too.
What if you mix it with diesel? How long would...
You bring up highlights, one of the issues we talked about. We want to buy a... Yes, it's a new engine, but it's a 2007 emission standard engine. So we want to buy that, not have to worry about urea for a year,
mm-hmm.
let someone else figure out the problems.
Yeah.
Or we buy the new engine, the 2010, but the bus is a little cheaper.
Yeah, how long would it take to use up that $6,000?
Yeah,
that's a $6,000 difference. So.
Even getting it set up would be $6,000.
How
think?
Much does it take?
Well, all of this ends up being, I guess as far as reimbursement you mean, less than they used to, because if you remember in this year's budget,
mm-hmm.
we received quite a deduction in transportation because they took it right off of depreciation, which is, where we're paying for our buses from. So I would say in the past we probably received 90%, maybe it's closer to 70 now. I don't have an exact number, but both would be ballpark.
The thing you need to understand, too, is there's two different buses. The 2010 bus is a four-engine bus. In other words, the engine's in the front of the bus. All of our buses are four-engine buses, except for two. When that rear-engine bus is the 2007 engine. Now, because they wanted... get some 2007 engines, they put them in rear engine buses. Most of the buses will stay in rear engine buses. And typically, they're a little more expensive, about $10,000 more expensive than a forward engine bus. A couple other things. This rear engine bus has luggage racks underneath it. It's a passive 132 cubic foot. We've kind of resisted using those as purchasing those in the past. We don't have a choice here. We can have very few changes on this bus. The range of the engine bus is a little bit easier to work on. I spoke with Cummins mechanic today. He's a man I really trust. He fixed them. He said his thought was he'd probably go to the 2007 engine, but let somebody else get out the talk with the engine in 2010.
Mm-hmm.
That's more expensive.
There is some... from my understanding, there's some information that the 2010 may get a higher mileage per gallon, but we don't know. I mean, we wouldn't know until we're using them and running the routes and seeing.
Maybe up to 5%.
Why have we resisted getting rear engine buses in the past? I can't remember.
The wheelbase is longer, 232-inch wheelbase for forward engine and 273-inch for rear engine, so they don't turn as quickly. But we're suggesting because the forward engine is probably getting a lot piece of bus.
Okay.
But it's small and things like that, the rear engine's the best because that's where you like it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's actual.
Well, if you're driving the bus or sitting in the front, it's better to have a rear engine.
Because
it's so much quieter. Let the kids just blow out.
Look, the rear engine.
Why?
More quiet.
Well, what do you think? I think it sounds like you need to make the decision.
Yeah,
I would think that you'd be much more skilled and you'd look into it. I would trust your decision.
Well, can't take action tonight. Just wanted any input that you might want to give for next meeting.
Sounds like it fixes in a lot of ways. You're going to get benefits either way. You're going to get problems either way. So
we will continue to look at it.
Okay.
We just wanted to see if you have
one thing that I don't think we just got this bid. Just got this bid. I think last Wednesday. These buses, there's a limited number of supply on the rear engine, the 2007 engine. We kind of have to let the dealer know to put a post on two buses instead of 2 hours.
Mm-hmm.
And they need to know that within a couple, 3 weeks.
Well, it sounds like you're leaning towards the 2007 to me. Is that kind of the way you're thinking?
Well, I mean, I trust the mechanic. You have to.
Yeah, that's what I would think, too. I don't think it's significant when you look in the storage, like you say, and getting the, maybe next year will be better for storing and knowing what to do.
We've had all Americans for a number of years. That's the model.
Mm-hmm.
That's no longer. The last buses were all American bodies. This is called the next generation. And a little higher head height in them. But the way they're constructed, we cannot put foot racks in them.
You like that? A little higher head to turn.
We should have had someone driving, I guess.
Yeah.
But we can't put book racks in the this next generation bus. But we just won't have them, so the storage compartments might help us on trips. And typically we'll take these newer buses and use them on trips for 2 to 3 or 4 years. So it may be an advantage that way as well.
Okay. We'll let you just report back to us next meeting.
Okay. I'll have a recommendation for you.
All right, thanks. All right.
Please
do.
I apologize for not commenting earlier, but we have had nothing but wonderful things to say about it.
Really?
I'll call him up to Roger. I forgot to tell you we were doing this. They work it out, and they take that.
Well, I told him not to do that, so he's being insubordinate.
He said, Kurt told me not to do it, but if you'll mind me, it doesn't,
don't.
Yeah, okay. No, yeah, but just really supportive. And Janice is on the ball and calls me up and says, now, what do you got going? And just nothing but praise for how things are running and working in that stuff.
It's
really
good. I don't know if you've ever followed a bus too often. I usually get students. They're so polite. Larry always pulls over and lets you pass.
Okay.
And I just think that's just.
Mm-hmm.
I told him not to do that either. So don't pull on that dying pass. He drives too fast.
Jones. And I just think that's really polite. They could stay out there in the road and make 10 cars pile up, but usually after they drop the kids off, they just pull over and let all the cars go by, and it's just nice.
Just good with the kids.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. Okay, thank you. I know we have Mrs. Dalton here to talk to us about a conference. Is there any? We'll just go ahead and.
Okay. What I'm here for is I got an email last night and it said this is Lamar Walker, he's the ag teacher down at San Juan School District, and he says we found out that we can go because him and his principal and his superintendent were doing the back and forth, yeah, you can or you can't. and they finally decided that they could go, and I was like, great, this is last minute notice, so I'm going to come to you and ask you tonight if I can present some information and get kind of a head nod of, yeah, we can start looking towards planning. What we would do is go to Denver National Livestock Western Stock Show. It's 4 days. The kids only miss 2 days of school because we'd leave Sunday morning and be home Wednesday evening, and it happens to time well, so that's Monday the 18th in January is a no school day. So they're only missing 2 days. I'm only missing 2 days of school, so we're not talking a lot about out-of-time school. We would go out, and I'm going to have him talk actually about some of the things that we've done in the past. We haven't got any kind of schedule set. We haven't got any kind of arrangements made. It's more of a, I went to Larry this morning, and he said, you can't get on the schedule. You can't get any kind of formal approval, but they need to be aware, and you need to talk to them about it. I haven't even talked to Ed about it, so Ed's kind of getting filled into it from his boys.
I talked to him.
What they're saying is the cost, total cost, and this is just the buses.
Tell us again what it is.
Denver National Western Stock Show.
Okay. This is something you have gone to.
We have went to in the past. Kirk used to go to it all the time, and he'd take the tour buses. Until we started teaming up with Mr. Walker, I had not went because of the cost and everything else. 2 years ago we went, we didn't have to pay any of the bus costs. This year, his principal said that the total cost was going to be $1,480. So
now
our
last time you went with San Juan, correct?
Yeah, and we went with him.
Okay.
So we're not changing anything, only the fact that we are being asked now to come up with half of the fuel money, which would actually still come out of the kids' pockets. When I went in high school, well, when I paid to go, it was $300 plus your out-of-pocket expenses and everything. So we're talking in the neighborhood of $4 to $4.50 to go on this trip. We're talking $2 to $2.50 for these students to be able to go on this trip. And that's total, unless they get carried away at, you know, one of the gift shops or something like that. They've not locked in anything for sure. We were paying, I went and got my receipts out of my FSA's treasurer's book. And I'm glad that that's one of the things as part of my job is to have a student keep track of our records, and we work together because I went straight to that binder and was able to pull it out today. What we do is we go down on Sunday, stop usually Grand Junction Eagle Eat, and he, like I said, he's going to go through the schedule. But there's flexibility in the amount of cost. I took $50 out of pocket. I didn't have my young kids. We don't allow any of that to go on. Just because we're there to be chaperones for these students, to be their parent, you could say. And I spent $50 out of pocket. The hotel has an extremely nice breakfast bar, a pool table, and a downstairs exercise facility, and a dance floor, and an indoor pool with hot tubs, and it's all in the same area, so I can have students that don't want to swim because they're uncomfortable for whatever reason, playing pool, and I can be watching them and the students in the hot tub and students in the dance floor all at the same time. It's just kind of a downstairs area. I really like it. It's the McQuinn over there. We stay there in the evenings, and then in the daytime we're out doing tours, seeing other parts of agriculture and seeing other parts of production and getting a taste and flavor of life outside of Emory County. We go with San Juan, and actually they're one of the schools that we compete against normally in our competitions and that. They're in our new area, and at that time they were, last year was the first year, okay, they were not at that time, but it allows the kids to get out and meet new kids from around Utah and get a feeling for, you know, other lifestyles and kind of get rid of the prejudice of, well, you're from so-and-so school district. There's even a chance right now, I don't know where Carvin's sitting, but we're talking with Mr. Thornley, who lives here in Farron, but is teaching over there, and he's even looking at going to this. We'll go over.
How many students are you planning?
Is there 19? Okay, I just did a tentative. If you could, if finances could work, if we can get approved, how many could go, and we'd be taking 19. And I've got some parents that are tentative. What's their phone?
Jack and Tammy Funk, Paul Gilbert.
We've got several parent groups that would be very excited. They've mentioned if we did go that they would be willing to go as chaperones. The Stokes, Dave or Nikki Stokes. So we've got, you know, some really good opportunities to have some good chaperones there. So what we would do is go out, spend a couple days. One full day would be spent at the stock show grounds, going to the different booths, watching the different horse shows, the rodeo, watching how they judge livestock, and letting these kids see the professional side of it from what we have here at Farron during July. And it's actually a good opportunity because the things that we look for here, we get over there and we find out we're not even in the right neighborhood. We're not raising the right kind of livestock. We're not raising this and that to be up on the pro circuit, you could say. Because these guys, that's what they do, is they chase shows year-round, and they raise a different type of livestock. What works for us doesn't work for them. And it's good for the kids to sense that and to see, you know, the different breeds and the different things of what's going on, and to just get a whole new... I love it. I watching them, the things that they talk about when they come back, you think all they can talk about was the play back at the hotel or something sometimes, because that's kind of where their focus will change to. Yeah, you're laughing. And it actually, I see it. I see, they talk about the different things that we see, and it's a good opportunity for them. So I'm asking you to consider it. I'll let Brian go ahead and talk really quickly about our schedule, and this is the exact schedule that we followed in 2008. Go ahead, Brian, and then I'll follow up.
Well, the dates on it are different, but on Sunday we'd leave the school at around 7:30.
This is mid-January.
Mid-January.
Correct? That's right. You're saying right around Martin Luther King Day.
Yep.
That's
okay. We'd wrap right through that.
We'd leave school about 7:30 and stop for lunch about noon. We should arrive in Denver about 5:00, and then there's a old Western restaurant called the Trail Dust, and we'd eat there with Monticello and all that at around 6:00. Next day we'd wake up and be on the bus at 8:00 and go to the Denver Zoo or the Museum of Natural History.
They're right together, the zoo's here and the Museum of Natural History's here, and you end up going to both. It's quite strange.
And after that we'd go have lunch, and then at 1:00 we'd go to the Coors Brewery and see the agricultural
real fast.
Yeah. You know, the smell of the hops was quite an experience. I've never smelled them before. I mean, it's not an agricultural crop from Utah.
Yeah.
And I was little Mormon girl from Emory County shocked. I was like, wow, there's a production in this thing, and the amount and the level of production just, it blew me away. But go ahead then.
And then between 5 and 7, go to dinner at the, how do you say that?
Place of Bonita.
Okay.
It's a little pirate restaurant, mm-hmm. And there's pirates swinging around, and there's water. It's all shimmery, shadowy. There's vines, there's pirates running around, having sword fights around you, you're diving into water.
Yeah, of course, the Irish man.
And then there's tunnels where they can come out and scare you, and pictures. It's just, it is the funnest restaurant you go to eat that I've ever been to.
The third day, we leave the motel about 8:30, then we go to the stock show, and we'd be there all day, and in the afternoon, there's the rodeo that we go to, and then we leave about 6:00 and go to dinner with our chapter. Then on Wednesday, we leave the motel at about 6:30 and leave, and then eat lunch in Grand Junction Mall. We should arrive back at the Junction at around 3:00.
Which puts us back here in Emory County about 6:00. Well, it'd be 6:00 to Emory, probably 6:37 to Castle Bell. So,
and like you said, this is from the previous year, and for her it was a lot more expensive, but for us it's only around 105, and then between all the students and everybody that went, we would pick up the bus, our half of the bus, thank you.
Which, what did you equate it out today as?
It's like $38 for the bus.
Because half, and what we think is a school bus, we're not taking the tour bus, we're taking one of their licensed drivers, one of their insured drivers with the school district. This is San Juan? San Juan School District. So how do you take one of our buses? We take one of our buses. Um, a couple years ago, Connie, who happens to be grandma to these guys, and she was able to drive us, because Sunday morning after the driver gets us down in the middle, you know, going. You made them at Thompson? We met him at Thompson, at the Thompson Junction gas station right there off the freeway. And we actually were able to get some snacks and like that, and then we went on from there. The only thing is we had discovered, as Roger found out when we were coming home that year, we had to make special arrangements to meet a driver because we ended up detouring down through Pueblo and Alamosa and then over and across, and it, instead of being an 8-hour bus ride, turned into a 12 or 13 hour bus ride because snow and it closed off by 7 at Vail. So
Monarch.
I can handle Monarch. We went over Monarch. It was very rare. But, yeah. So,
well, I personally like the partnering with the other school districts because it provides a lot of additional experiences and also supervision. And I think the biggest concern that I would have would to make sure we have the, you know, really good supervision,
mm-hmm.
adequate numbers of supervision. Supervision is the biggest thing in any of this. So we have to make sure that that's covered in this, that we have really reliable, good people that are there and with the kids and supervising.
What is the district's minimum age or requirements on a chaperone?
20,
I've got a
21.
Couple. 21. Do they need to be married or no? I've got a former officer, he's graduated, he's been out 2 years. Kevin Jensen, Wayne Kathy Jensen's boy from Cleveland. He's a former state officer and he is actually.
There's no stipulation on being married. You have to be 21, but one of the things that we haven't considered in the past that we're probably going to have to is that these chaperones that are going overnight trips will need to have background checks done too.
Mm-hmm.
So we would have to make sure that we do a background check, which is not hard to do because we have that capability either in our office sometime prior to then, or at the service center in Price. But they would need to have background checks because they will be supervising students and maybe even
right.
alone with them.
Right. You want, if we were to be able to do this, would that be a stipulation?
They would need to have background
right.
checks.
We could do that.
Because it's overnight.
Right.
It's
no, I totally understand that. There's some things that I see go on that drives me wild when I see some advisors from other counties where one of the places we go to is a summer leadership tour. And you sleep on the ground or you sleep on a hardwood floor. There's no beds for only maybe 6 people. And it's at the southern U.S. or SU cabin across the canyon. And some of the older advisors, they'll say, all right, we'll see ya. We're out of here, and they head to the hotel down in Cedar City. And we're like, are you kidding? What if you have an attack of some kind of this? So.
But the board meeting isn't until 13th, and this
right.
is that weekend. So I guess they need some kind of indication where they should go ahead and make plans. Or.
So the ratio for an overnight for supervision is 1 to 5, is that correct?
Well, I can't remember.
Is it 1 to 5 or 1 to 8?
I think it's 1 to 8.
Is it 1 to 8?
It'd be better if you had even smaller than that for long distance trips
good.
Like that, but I think the policy is 1 to 8 for overnight or out of state. But if you have 19 and if you had probably 4 or 5 chaperones, you'd probably okay. That'd be like 1 to 4, 1 to 5.
Would be, right now, if we take the 3 that have volunteered, we definitely want to go if we go. And that includes me. That would put us at 4 chaperones. So, me and 3 parents. And then there's some others that they're right there on the border. I don't know. I haven't even talked to them, but when they, I have talked to them in the past about the possibilities that you'd come around. They were definitely let me know because I'm interested type thing. So.
So I guess we just need to let them know if they should proceed. If they have any concerns, or I think you need to meet the chaperone definitely limit,
yeah.
and everything in compliance there.
Was there a question raised at another school board meeting? I can't remember about going into another state.
That's a transportation issue. That's why I was surprised San Juan is still doing that, but.
Well,
they can still do it. It's just that the caps on liability are moved, and risk management doesn't like you to. Now San Juan gets away with it, or is covered a lot because they live right on the,
yeah.
the border of Colorado and Arizona. So most of their travel is out of state.
Okay.
So they.
It's actually closer
covered.
For them to go there than it is to go to Logan. Yeah.
Anybody can take bus out there. I just assume it's San Juan and Emory County.
Yeah.
I agree.
Well, that's a good point. Think about.
Because we've, basically we've been encouraged to use commercial transportation if we're going to leave the state because of the liability.
As I recall, the letter that came from state risk management requires the school district to notify state risk management that they're going to take a bus or school district vehicle out of state.
Right.
So I think
I'm sure they're on top of that down there.
Yeah.
Okay, so follow up and make sure with his principal, because I do end up talking to his principal on some of the details.
That'd be a good idea.
Do they have one bus driver or two?
They have one, and our one stop is considered a full break where he is completely left alone and sits with the bus and relaxes. And they can actually, with their bus, they actually made it there with room to spare with one tank of gas. So that kind of gives you I don't know on time constraints. I know that you have to worry about it over 8 hours.
Yeah.
But we're not over 8 hours by.
Is it 10?
Okay.
It's just
so
from San Juan to there would be about 8 and a half.
I think it's a good thing, especially when you're partnering with other school districts. I think it's a good experience for you.
I'm fine with it.
Okay.
We'll go ahead.
Bring it up in next meeting to move forward with it.
We'll finalize everything and have exact
that would be
good. For you.
Mm-hmm. I would like to know as soon as you find out how many students and who the chaperone
is. Yeah, that would be
you could email
really
me or add or somebody.
I'll send it to both of you.
Okay.
Yes, do background check on me too.
We ought to.
Does it take time? How long does it take to get the background check back?
3 to 5 days, right now.
They probably ought to get it going, huh?
We'll have the background machine on the week of the 14th of December in our office. So if you can find the chaperones by then, they can come over and get that background check done. But the background check does cost $20. So you'd have to figure out how to cover that.
What if I know that they've been done by the 4-H office because 4-H has to do it? Could they use that?
We'd have to have a copy of the report.
Well, that's what I mean.
If they have a copy of the recent background check report, if it was a fingerprint check. So you can do a check with Social Security number and birthday. But it's a Utah check only. It doesn't check the surrounding states, so it has to be.
No, that's all other fees, because that's what they do.
So it's a fingerprint background check, and it's this is a situation where they will be. I mean, we require it now of volunteers who come into the schools. If they're going to be with students unsupervised, they have to, by law, have a background check.
Okay.
And I would consider this is probably situations where they may be alone on occasions during the trip,
right.
So we ought to. Now, if your program wants to pay for their background checks, that's fine. I don't know that you'd want to charge them for it, but if there's some way to, if you have, that'd be like $80 for four of them.
Okay.
You'd have them with your license, so.
Right.
Well, I see a son already say no.
Oh, don't
be
sad. We don't want Dad to do that trip.
Okay.
All right. We'll
all right.
You.
Thank
I
you.
I appreciate it.
Thanks.
Any other comments? Are there items? before closed meeting?
No, we don't.
We don't have any.
But Josh has some things right back here that he wants you to partake of before you go home.
Oh, that's nice of you. Oh, thanks. Thanks for thinking of us. Okay.
So we're ready to go.
We are.
So moved.
Second.
All in favor? Aye.
I woke up.
Some people really like to be here, though.
Oh, yeah. And I'm on.
Okay.
There's the